The sensational breakthrough in one of Australia's best-known cold cases, the unsolved disappearance of Sydney woman Lyn Dawson almost 40 years ago now from the family home on the North Shore. Yesterday, the police arrested Lyn Dawson's former husband, Chris Dawson, 70-year-old retired high school teacher and former first-grade rugby player. Reports this morning suggest Chris Dawson's former schoolgirl lover, who moved into the family home just 2 days after Lyn Dawson went missing back in 1982, could be the star witness in the police case. Chris Dawson has long maintained his innocence around his former wife's disappearance and presumed death. The case returned to public attention through the podcast The Teacher's Pet, which has had 27 million downloads here and around the world. And the journalist Hedley Thomas just was awarded the Gold Walkley for his work on The Teacher's Pet. So just what role do true crime podcasts play in helping police and detectives break open cold cases? We're joined this morning by former homicide detective with Victoria Police, Charlie Bezina, and Emily Webb, who's the co-presenter of the Australian True Crime podcast series. Emily, Charlie, welcome to Breakfast.
Thank you.
Hi, Fran.
Emily, to you first. There's been two coronial investigations into the disappearance and presumed death of Lyn Dawson now. Police reopened this case in 2015. Police then presented new evidence to the DPP earlier this year. Given all of that, what role, what place do you think the Teacher's Pet podcast investigation had in helping police get to this point yesterday where they have arrested Chris Dawson?
Fran, I think obviously the police were doing their background work always with this case, but the power of podcasting is it just has the ability to get to so many people. They can listen at any time, and it also brings awareness to a case that a lot of people wouldn't know about. I didn't know about this case before I started listening to Teacher's Pet, so I guess it jogs people's memory, but it also gets people interested in something they've never heard of before.
And Charlie, as a former homicide detective, do you think that we'd be at this point of the arrest of Chris Dawson if it hadn't been for the Teacher's Pet?
Well, I think there was, as Emily has said, the input by the detectives was painstaking, and they certainly uncovered some evidence, but I quite wholeheartedly agree with Emily that given the fact that the podcast, it remains in the public mind all the time, and people do move around the world around Australia, and they're the ones we want to reach through these podcasts. So that's a very, very valuable tool to investigators.
Yeah, but it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because we keep seeing in podcasts, and the ABC's podcast Trace was another one, where the journalist uncovers evidence and testimony and facts that the police haven't. Why can journalists do that and police can't?
Well, it depends on the people they're speaking to. Now, if they're criminals or they're not criminals, and they may have a fear of the police or what they're going, or they might be just talking to the investigative journalist, and they feel more comfortable and after all these years and saying, well, look, I'll tell you this, be it off the record or not on the record. So there's a myriad of different reasons from people talking to different people. They could talk to relatives, and they won't talk to the police, or they might say, I don't want to get involved, but by talking to a journalist, I'll tell you about it, run a story, but I don't want to get involved, and they're convinced then to hopefully come forward. So, look, there's a number of reasons as to why a lot of people won't talk to the police.
Emily, how do you see that? Is it simple that people prefer to talk to someone other than the police, or something else going on here?
Well, I think for a lot of people, maybe they just don't know what to do with their information. You heard it on The Teacher's Pet.
Mm.
You know, we were all wondering, why didn't anyone talk about this at the time? But they didn't maybe feel like they had access to people or that the information wasn't important. And I think what the podcast does, and maybe the journalist, it's like we get to know the presenter, like Rachel Brown or Hedley Thomas. Maybe people feel a bit more confident in contacting with information. So it just could be that. And maybe some people do have possibly a fear or a distrust of police, or just they just don't know that the police would find their information valuable.
Listening to these podcasts, I mean, the overwhelming sense you get is that the police didn't do a very good job at the time. Charlie, is that fair criticism, that police have actually had their performance put under the gun by these kind of podcasts?
Look, I suppose earlier in the days, many years ago, that may well have been the case. And we're certainly all critical of it, and they certainly don't have the resources then that we do have today. So, look, there's often criticisms levelled at investigators in the early stages of of these investigations, where especially in situations such as the Dawson matter, where the wife's run away, she's done this, she's done that, maybe they just fell on the fact that we do have lazy detectives back then. But now the high public profile and the accountability, it really draws the pressure onto the police to do their job.
This is, I want to come back to that in journalism, but this is a particularly tricky case, I suppose, Charlie, in the sense that there is no body. How much more difficult does that make things, and how much does that affect perhaps the police attitude to solving a case like this and keeping at it?
Well, again, same as all those years ago, that may have had, would have had an effect. The fact is, well, look, there's no body, so we really can't pursue it. But I think since those times, we've certainly had convictions here in Victoria without bodies. And I had one where I charged, it's very similar circumstances. This millionaire and his wife disappeared. She left me, and we never found the body. But it took me 5 years, but I ended up charging him. All circumstantial, of course, but the fact is that the DPP accepted the fact that she was murdered. We didn't have a body. We charged him, but unfortunately, he got discharged at committal. But we gave it a run as it went because there was no other reason for it.
Charlie, you resigned your role with the homicide team in Victorian Police almost 10 years ago, before true crime podcasting was a thing.
Yep.
But what sort of experience did you have working with journalists or the media to solve cases? Because, you know, there's suggestions that these podcasts can sometimes compromise investigations. What's your take on this? Is that a risk worth taking?
Yes, it is. I gravitated quite significantly to the media, because they were a very, very valuable tool for us as investigators to get the message out there, and even trying to then rekindle it as these podcasts now do, because, you know, relationships change in situations and say, well, geez, I'm going to ring up about that, or the police, the public might think, you know what, I think the police must have solved that. I've heard nothing more about it. And they do forget about it. It's the big issue of keeping it in the public mind as often and as significant as you can. And this is where the journalists, investigative journalists, podcasting, any media attention we can get as investigators is absolutely gold for us.
Emily Webb, that'd be music to your ears, wouldn't it? It's not the experience the journalists have described to me sometimes in recent times working with police.
Yeah, well, look, we find that... we've had experiences with police where they've welcomed being able to have the opportunity to speak and get their message across. And I think if you can keep a good relationship with the police and, I guess, help not hinder as much as possible, I think that's where it works. I guess there is a danger possibly that, you know, someone could, you know, cause problems for an investigation. But I think judging from what's happened in the last week with Teachers Pet and Trace, I mean, I just think these podcasts have been invaluable to police, and I imagine that they would be quite grateful, I guess. I don't know.
Charlie, from your sense of your colleagues, I was putting a bit of a different view of police's level of engagement and cooperation with the media sometimes, not obviously in your case, but do you think this might have an impact on police's attitudes to working with these true crime podcasters, for instance?
Yes, all of us should, but unfortunately a lot of times there is this distrust between the police, and that comes from, I suppose, in command. I've had a lot of situations where Emily and other ones have come to me, and other journalists have said to me, well, Charlie, well, I want you to speak about a case, and I'm very loath to speak about cases I didn't have direct involvement in. And the majority of the responses I get from the journalists that I speak to saying, Charlie, well, VicPol won't talk to us. They won't do this, they won't do that, even though it's a good news story. And so then that's when I'm happy to input, because I'm very victim-focused and getting the victims' answers and their families and the like. So there is that distrust, and VicPol in particular do it very, very badly through their media liaison people. It's like trying to crack a rock with a toothbrush. And it's ultimately difficult. They need to change their attitude. But you've got to sit down with the media and say, you know what? Trust them, bring them into the investigation and say, look, we don't want you to do anything now because we've got a particular strategy happening, but unfortunately they keep them at arm's length, and that's the biggest problem they can do.
Yeah. And Emily, just finally, obviously there's an appetite for these true crime podcasts. I mean, the numbers are mind-boggling, really, and the rash of new investigations and cold cases being turned over and looked at is really quite something. But is there a cautionary note here to make sure that the True Crime Podcast doesn't err too much to the entertainment side of the spectrum rather than the search for justice, because voyeurism is an easy line to slip into, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I think that's a really good point, and that's something that I know myself and my co-host Michelle think about a lot. And look, the public do have a massive appetite for true crime, and there's so much out there for them to listen to, especially overseas stuff, but more and more Australian stuff. And I think for us, I know it's about being respectful, being correct, and being very, I guess, victim-focused and talking about issues beyond the crime. We like to talk about the ripple effect of crime. That's what we focus on. But certainly I think, you know, there can be a danger that it can err into sort of, you know, crime as entertainment, which, you know, does sort of leave you with a bit of a sickly feeling, I think. So I think listeners are becoming more discerning.
Emily Webb, Charlie Bezina, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Fran.
Charlie Bezina is a former homicide detective with Victorian Police. Emily Webb is the co-presenter of the Australian True Crime podcast series. And today, Chris Dawson is expected to be extradited to New South Wales to face charge of murdering Lynn Dawson. That story, follow that story through today. You're listening to RM Breakfast. It's 13 minutes to 7.